Promise 49, and I'll read it for you three times. You can ask for anything in my name, and I will do it, so that the Son can bring glory to the Father. Yes, ask me for anything in my name, and I will do it. John 14, 13 and 14. You can ask me for anything in my name, and I will do it, so that the Son can bring glory to the Father. Yes, ask me for anything in my name, and I will do it. John 14, 13 and 14. You can ask for anything in my name, and I will do it, so that the Son can bring glory to the Father. Yes, ask me for anything in my name, and I will do it. John 14, 13 and 14. Approximately 43 days after Jesus speaks these words, he ascended back to the throne room of heaven on a bright Jerusalem afternoon. He'd been standing on the Mount of Olives, talking to his friends, explaining the coming of the Holy Spirit, when suddenly he was rising from the ground. Up, up, upward he ascended as his friends all stood below. One can imagine how they strained to keep their eyes wide open, trying to take it all in. Then, reaching the clouds, disappearing from their ability to see him anymore, Jesus suddenly whisked away to the right side up that is the heavenly realm. Personally, I've always imagined the entrance to the throne room being an enormous, brightly colored, paneled pair of doors, massive on their gilt fittings. Jesus walks right through them, just shoving them open. Across the infinite and yet intimate distance of the hall, he then locks eyes with his Father upon his throne and begins his walk toward him. The angels and saints, first hushed, erupt. They sing a song of his glory as he strides down the center aisle, trumpets blaring, harps ascendant, until he reaches the very dais. Then all is silent. All wait. Jesus raises up his human foot, takes the first step, then the second, and the third. And then, with a smile that shines with all the heavenly glory and earthly relief of completing his salvation work, Jesus retakes his seat on the throne. He walks that last few steps and turns around, gathers his train, looks out into the sea of faces, and sits back down. Down upon the seat in which he'd always sat. Down into the comfort of where he'd created creation. Back inside the hall where all divine dominion resides. Back beside his Father, that other part of himself. But then, in a move that must have made all his heavenly watchers watch in wonder, he did something rather curious. He leaned far forward, almost to the very front edge of his throne. His head started tilting to one side, like he was listening for something in particular, and all heaven waited to see what it might be. Well, after suddenly seeing their friend begin to ascend, rise to the clouds, depart behind them, the disciples stayed right where they were, with hands cupped around their eyes, blocking out all extraneous light. They just kept hoping that they might catch one more glimpse. Which kind of explains their nonchalance when two angelic beings arrive. A casual conversation ensues, man to angel. After which the disciples, told to head back into the city to wait for the power promised by Jesus, head directly back into the city. I've always imagined them walking back down a narrow trail on the western slope of the Mount of Olives, down through its twists and turns into the Kidron Valley, down through where, perhaps, on the night before the cross, Jesus had turned toward a run of vines and said, "I am the vine, you are the branches." Then up they climb, upward toward the eastern wall of the city, toward their partial view of Herod's temple. Then entering by a gate, meandering almost mindlessly through the maze of narrow streets, they arrive to where that morning had started, back to the upper room, as they've come to call that space. They climb the stairs, enter through the narrow door, and take their place around the room, some in chairs, some upon reed mats upon the floor. The others who were not part of the hike and picnic on the Mount of Olives are looking around, wondering where Jesus is. But no one says a word yet. No one moves. The room is totally silent. Then the 11, almost as one, rise to their feet, cross the room, and assemble in circle at the center of the whole earthly fellowship of Jesus of Nazareth. They study each other's faces for the same understanding. They all wonder if the others are thinking what they're thinking. Then one of them, was it Peter? Was it John? Was it an unexpected one like Simon the Zealot? Begins to pray. He closes his eyes. He lifts both hands. But he prays a prayer that has never been prayed in the whole of human history, a prayer that is perfectly in accordance with their perfect understanding of today's promise. "Jesus," he prays, "it's us, all of us." And as he hears those words, Jesus himself leans back upon the throne of heaven, smiling to himself, and knows that all is well. The Holy Spirit is only 10 days away. The kingdom of heaven is embedded firmly within those hearts. And now, understanding the power of his name, knowing that they can always call anytime, his friends have opened the direct channel of communication. Earth to heaven, the open way is Jesus. His name holds all the power of heaven. "You can ask for anything in my name, and I will do it, so that the Son can bring glory to the Father. Yes, ask me for anything in my name, and I will do it." My friends, shall we seriously take him up on this promise?